This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 24th of April, 2021. Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from Winchester and District's Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter for this week, Peter Lydiard, and I'm joined by Roz, my wife.
Hello.
And we will read the newspaper together. Liz and Gordon Legg have edited the extracts for this week. So we'll have our usual regular notices. I expect you know all these off by heart by now. And I ought to as well, but anyway, I'm going to read them. If you know anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Liz Legree. The contact number is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. As you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And one more note for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, which is www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent is first on the list. So let us take a look at this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle. The news items are Dad's Pain After Childbirth Death and Boomtown is cancelled. So, Roz, can we have the first news headline story?
Yes, indeed. And this is a very moving story, and one which this particular dad should be so proud of. It's headed Dad's Pain After Childbirth Death. A heartbroken widower has received overwhelming surprise for a tribute to his late wife, who died during childbirth. On March the 13th, Bishop Waltham's mother of two, Lucy Howell, passed away at just 32 years old at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Now her husband Matt is raising money to install a memorial at Winnell Moors Nature Reserve in Winchester, one of Lucy's favourite pastimes and place to take her eldest daughter, Rosie. The GoFundMe has already raised more than £10,500 through 271 donors, despite the target being set at £3,000. Matt, who is a scientist at the Institute of Naval Medicine, told the Chronicle, "Forgive me if this sounds a bit cliched, but if it sounds like a cliche, it's just to say that Lucy was an incredibly generous and thoughtful person. I have been astonished by the heart of the kindness she has given to others, and she is sorely missed by friends and family. She was always the first to remember significant events in the lives of those around us and to remember to check in on someone if they'd been going through difficult times. Personally, I will remember Lucy as being my absolute perfect fit." The couple met at Wyvern Technical College at Fair Oak, where they were both around 15 years old. "I loved how she was cheerful, kind and funny, but also practical and sincere when the situation needed it," said Mark. "She liked to make life into a series of little adventures, and her biggest passion was for nature and the environment. She loved every aspect of it, whether it was walking around the local allotments, pointing out the different fruits and vegetables, strolling in through nature reserves such as Winnell Moors, and of her enthusing about wildlife. So much of that has rubbed off on Rosie, who shares that wide-eyed love of nature. I had to get myself a series of guides about trees and birds and other wildlife just to try and continue that. But she seemed to know everything in her head. We are all in complete shock at what has happened. A mother dying in childbirth is almost unheard of here. And it happened very suddenly and unexpectedly. Telling Rosie that her mummy wasn't coming home from the hospital was the hardest thing I've ever had to do. Matt added, Pippa is the only positive part of this. She is a strong, healthy baby who has just started smiling at us. Whinnelmore's Nature Reserve is run by Hampshire and the Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, of which Lucy was a member. Matt said, it's likely that Rosie won't remember much, or any, of her time with Lucy, other than through pictures and stories. So having a memorial will be somewhere we can sit and remember Lucy. It'll be very important to us as a family now, and in the years to come. I also like that we can do something that will have a really positive impact on nature and to make improvements that will benefit both wildlife and people. Donate uk.gofundme.com/F for Freddie/Lucy Howell. Howell spelt H-O-W-E-L-L.
Thank you, Roz. The second story is about Boomtown, and it's headed Boomtown is cancelled. The most controversial music event in the Winchester District's diary has been cancelled. Boomtown Fair 2021 was scheduled to run from August 11th to August the 15th, but will now take place instead the following year. Each year, a number of local residents formally object to the music festival, which sees hundreds of artists perform at Matterley Bowl. This year's 66,000 capacity event was sold out. Organisers said on Tuesday, "We have been doing everything within our power to try and find a solution to the mind-boggling conundrum of putting on a safe and well-run event to the sheer scale, complexity and intricate nature of Boomtown this summer. However, the time has simply run out for us to be able to proceed in a way that would live up to our high safety and production standards for the large-scale event we had planned. Crucially, with less than 4 months to go and after almost half a year of collecting campaigning to the government, COVID-specific cancellation insurance for events simply does not exist at this point in time, and therefore there is no safety net to support. This means that we would be gambling up to an eight-figure loss should the event not be able to go ahead due to COVID restrictions, which will put the future of the festival at serious risk. Boomtown says tickets for 2021 will automatically roll over to the 2022 event. Steve Bryan, Winchester's MP, believes the festival is a victim of people not believing in the COVID vaccine. I was sorry to see this announcement, but not surprised. It's a blow to the local economy and the many organisations who receive money via the Boomtown Community Fund. But is also a blow to yet another event where young people especially might just have had some fun this summer. We on the DCMS Select Committee warned that without a state-backed insurance solution, many live events, especially festivals, would struggle this year, and so it has proved. I would argue that Boomtown are victims of our own seeming refusal to believe in vaccines and live with COVID as an epidemic disease now that we've vaccinated those most at risk. That is the real tragedy here, and it will have much wider ramifications than summer festivals. Local campaigner David Payne said, "The cancellation is really good news for both the special landscape and the wildlife in and around Batterley Farm. If Boomtown's organisers really do have a commitment to the land, which they claimed in their announcement, they should spend time finding a site outside our national park to move to in 2022, where their customers could enjoy the event, but far less damage will be caused to the natural environment. So now we move on to the death notices, starting with Ros, please.
Thank you. Our first is Dean. Florence Evelyn Dean passed away on 10th of April, aged 82.
Harold Sybil Fay, known as Sibs, Harold from Romsey, who passed away peacefully on the 30th of March, age 92.
Middleton, Peter John Middleton, passed away peacefully on the 9th of April, aged 94.
Pogson, Anthony George Arthur, known as Tony Pogson, Commander RM retired, sadly passed away on the 14th of April, surrounded by his family.
Steele, Stella Christine Steele, passed away peacefully on the 6th of April in her sleep at Wessex Lodge Nursing Home, aged 88.
Tucker, Phyllis Tucker, passed away on the 30th of March, aged 96.
Wall, Ralph Peter Wall, passed away in his sleep on the 1st of April, aged 81 years.
Now we have Christian comment from Ros, please.
Yes, thank you. This one is entitled A Nation Grieves and Give Thanks, and it's contributed by the Reverend Philip Crinks. Watching last Saturday's funeral at Windsor was an experience few will forget. Prince Philip was laid to rest. This was done with great care and powerful symbolism. There was also necessary austerity given the circumstances. Only a handful of musicians could enhance the worship. Attendance was limited. The royal family shared the sacrifices of the nation's families over the last year. There was much grief at the service in St George's Chapel. There was also thanksgiving. At first sight, that might seem surprising. When someone dies, it is the grief which is immediate. The human instinct is to cry out in pain at what has been lost. And that instinct is right. Any funeral, certainly any Christian funeral, must name and acknowledge how the death tears a hole in the fabric of life. Yet there is a second instinct which follows, to give thanks for all that has been. A funeral tribute or eulogy expresses grief and thanksgiving together. Prince Philip's funeral did not include a formal tribute. Nonetheless, the service told its story. The service personnel paid their respects. They remembered the naval officer who served this country in war. The family members walked behind the Land Rover. They remembered a father, a grandfather, and a family leader. There in the chapel, the garter, the principal King of Arms, read out Prince Philip's titles and styles. Thus he remembered his role in the nation, Commonwealth, and international communities. But then also, and poignantly, husband of Her Most Excellent Majesty Elizabeth II. The Queen's quiet, solitary grief told the rest of the story. The relation of grief and thanksgiving also underlies two other purposes of Christian funerals. We seek to comfort one another in our grief. Some so we share, some memories to cherish. We commend our brother or sister to God, not because God needs reminding of them. He knew them before they were born, until their death, dying. Rather, we commend them to remind ourselves of our human limits. The gifts we receive from God must go back to Him, painful as that is. We must place those who have died in the hands of God, whose Son Jesus is the most merciful Redeemer and Judge. At these moments, you may consider your own life. And now that will also be in God's good time coming to its end. What will it mean for you to leave behind? How do you wish to come before God at that time? One prayer given for us to use over recent weeks recalled Prince Philip's naval service. A version of it might be ours, as we look ahead to the next years of life for ourselves, our city, our nation. O eternal Lord God, who alone spreads out the heavens and rules the raging of the sea, be pledged to receive into your almighty and most gracious protection the soul of our brother Philip, and grant that with him and all the faithful departed, we may at the last enter into heaven of your unending joy. Through Jesus Christ, our Lord. Amen. And that was written by the Reverend Philip Crinks, who is priest in charge of St. Faith's Parish at St. Cross in Winchester.
Thank you, Ros. Now we go on to letters to the editor. And the first one is written by Chris Gillam, and it's headed "Four People." Sir, John Hearn's article was an eminently reasonable vision of a civilised city, Chronicle April the 8th. A city where the streets are primarily for the use of many people who live in it and have a moderate desire for healthy space rather than a relatively small number of people who feel they have an unfettered right to much more space and a right to make that space unhealthy. Such rationality, as usual, attracts vituperation. Putting aside the Mr. Toad letter from Robert Mallin, Chronicle April the 15th, who argues that speed limits should increase in order to make roads safer, and then categorises other road users as idiots, the attacks on the Hearn article are classic ones, arguing the general from the particular. Of course there are people with disabilities, and of course there are people in rural settlements who need a proper transport disposition, but how is that an argument for allowing anybody to drive everywhere? The ersatz indignation at persecuted motorists needs elementary scrutiny. Motorists are massively subsidised to more than three times the total tax and duty take on their activity. Subsidy in Winchester includes public parking that comes nowhere near paying the resource cost of its provision, and the externalising costs placed on public health, on public transport, by impeding more efficient access, on shops and businesses, through reducing the total access of people and the costs of occupying valuable space. The subsidy is highly progressive. It is enjoyed only by motorists, but paid by all, including the non-motorists, who are likely to be, on average, to be poorer. The climate crisis is literally an existential threat. It demands behavioural change. Climate justice, the need to take our fair share of the burden of behaviour change, is global, but it should also operate locally. Car domination of our economy is as unfair as it is dangerous and unsustainable. Why does Charles Hobbes consider that he has some natural right to more space than the non-motorist? Chronicle Letters, April the 15th. Why does he think he has the right to pollute the streets of Winchester and restrict the rights of others to active movement or efficient transport? Well, that letter was written by Chris Gillam of the Upper High Street, Winchester.
Poor roads. Sir, well done to those who are organising the drainage improvement work in Loveton Lane and Springvale Road, Kingsworthy and Headbourneworthy. I am sure that those of us who use the local roads frequently will be content to put up with some discomfort that will inevitably precede the great benefit that will follow if we get severe weather. Thank you. It has to be hoped, however, that the quality of making good to trenches will be infinitely better than that carried out in the past to such areas as Nation Hill and Springvale Road, which are little better than cart tracks in places following disgracefully shoddy making good work after good work was carried out, and shows a lack of understanding on how to make good a road surface following trench work. What is worse, this awful work was obviously approved by council employees and paid off with your money and mine. Here's to better things. And that was by Arnold Jarman of The Pastures, Kingsworthy.
The next letter is written by Alison M. Bidden, Mrs. It's headed Squandering. Sir, where there's a will, there's a way, is an oft-quoted adage, one which seems to have become rather apposite over the last year or so. Not content with public money apparently being funnelled without scrutiny in the direction of some eyebrow-raising suppliers, we now see resurrected yet another excuse touted for unnecessary expenditure in the form of calls by MPs for a replacement to the Royal Yacht Britannia as a memorial to the late Duke of Edinburgh. I hope our MP is not one of them. I totally fail to see the relevance to His Royal Highness Prince Philip or his memory of such a vessel. As a man deeply interested in and supportive of wildlife, conservation and philanthropic causes, including youth initiatives, would it not be more fitting in these constrained times and of greater, wider benefit to all to offer extra support, financial and moral, to those causes rather than indulging yet another vanity project? The Prime Minister has already just added to his fleet of aircraft and spent an exorbitant, maybe that should be extortionate, amount, £2.6 million is the quoted figure, on revamping his press conference room for no apparent reason other than to display the national flag more prominently or to appear more presidential. Some of us taxpayers are getting a tad fed up with excuses for our money being squandered on unnecessary fripperies when so many people are suffering the effects of furlough, lost jobs and businesses, impacted education and in some cases having to resort to using food banks. Prince Philip deserves the best and education is paramount. Actually ensuring, rather than promising, that all children have decent laptops and internet access would be a start. All it needs is the actual will. Sadly, children's needs are a lot less sexy than a flashy new boat. So that letter was written by Alison M. Bidden, Mrs. Northbrook Close, St. Giles Hill, Winchester.
Terry Bond writes, Photo Danger. Sir, I know that your motoring features are submitted to you, but wasn't it a bad example to publish a photograph of a Mercedes-Benz GLB parked along Broadside on a railway level crossing, Chronicle, April the 15th? There have been a number of stories in the news of people stopping to take photographs on lines, and although, hopefully, permission was sought and granted for this, others may just think that if Mercedes-Benz can do it, well then it must be okay for me. The possible consequences do not bear thinking about. And that was a very thoughtful Terry Bond from Archers Road, Eastleigh.
Okay, the next letter is written by Simon Lever, or maybe Lever. It's headed, City Centre Returning to Normal. Sir, Such a joy to witness Winchester returning once more to a bustling and desirable place to live and visit, chronicle April the 15th. On Friday, the cathedral outer close was packed with people enjoying picnics, families and friends gathering together, majority observing social distancing. The atmosphere reminded me of happy times prior to the pandemic, and what joy to see a busy high street, including many tourists. On Wednesday, there was an outside market. Once again, this is a time to celebrate, a return to what Winchester has always been, a magnet for visitors to admire the historical past and optimistic future. That letter was written by Simon Lever, or Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Sad Loss is the title of this next letter, and it's from Phil Yates. So the passing of Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, is a loss not only to the royal family, but also to the whole nation. I recall meeting the Queen and Prince Philip 16 years ago on the occasion of the official recognition of all those who served on the home front in the Second World War, which includes the Bevy Boys, although we were compulsory consigned to the coal mine instead of joining the armed forces. The Prince asked me, "What was your occupation before coming a bevy boy?" I replied, "I was a solicitor's clerk, sir." As quick as a flash, he said, "Gosh, you had a change of career," and then asked, "Well, what did you do down the pit?" I recalled, "I was a pony driver, sir." Again, quick response, "Ah, yes, I do know something about ponies." He wished me well and then continued on his journey. A short but interesting conversation with Prince Philip. Then the Queen came along and said, "Delighted to see a bevy boy here today." I responded briefly, but politely. And that was from Phil Yates, a regular contributor to the letters, and he lives in Tower Street, Winchester.
Chris Bullen writes, "Student cars. So, I am grateful to the residents of Sleepers Dell Gardens for raising the issue of student parking in roads close to the university, chronicle April the 8th. I live in Battery Hill, where there are a large number of HMOs, that is, houses of multiple occupation, rented to students by the university and private landlords. A large number of students have private cars which occupy many of the spaces formerly available to private residents. Many of these cars are only used to go to the corner shops to buy crisps and beer, which are within easy walking distance. Many of us locals who have lived here for decades find ourselves unable to find a parking space close-ish to home. Days out and shopping expeditions are spoiled by the anticipation that we might not be able to find a space where we can unload or ensure that our vehicle will not be subject to criminal activity. And we have to pay for the privilege. Why do students living close to their college in a small city where there is frequent public transport and most amenities are within easy walking distance need to bring cars with them? There are, moreover, good public transport connections, including night buses, to Southampton. When I have contacted the university regarding this issue, they claim that they discourage students from bringing cars by telling them there is a permit parking in the area. This is not going to discourage them when mummy and daddy will pay for the permit, or it's just another debt to add to the loan. The university usually tried to place most of the blame on many private landlords, who, it is true, do nothing to discourage students from bringing vehicles or even providing off-street space, in many cases. The letting agents do not even seem to care at all. At least one house near me is being advertised as having unrestricted on-street parking. I do not see why the university cannot ban students from bringing cars to Winchester. There are examples of other institutions, such as Exeter and Cambridge, who already do so. there is some kind of irony or paradox in the university's statements about sustainability and their adoption of Greta Thunberg as a role model for students who add their carbon footprint by starting and stopping cars to drive less than half a mile for just a few items of shopping. And that letter was written by Chris Bullen, Battery Hill, Stanmore, Winchester.
This is an acknowledgement to the Reverend Mike Gardner, and it's written by Elizabeth Barron. Sir, I was pleased that... Thank you. This one's headed Student Cars, and it comes from Harry Johnson Hill. Sir, I concur with the residents of Sleepers Dell Gardens, Chronicle Letters, April the 8th. As a resident of Peninsula Road, I know all too well what it is like to be living next to students, a five-storey block on the junction of Erskine Road, and my own is near completion after 3 years of building works, a great disturbance. I invite anyone to experience the noise in normal times in the dark hours on my road, a thoroughfare from the campus to the city centre. The university is expanding, not in an out-of-town campus, but in the heart of Winchester, and the knock-on effect is that every year it swallows more much-needed family homes. This can be seen on the plan for a block of 600 beds on Millthorpe Lane, a quiet residential lane surrounded by university land. Residents are being pushed out and feel powerless against the tide. It must be met with opposition. Perhaps planning policies could be put in place at a local level to stop the overwhelming of the area. And that is Harry Johnson Hill, Conservative City Candidate, St Paul's Ward, Peninsula Road, West Hill, Winchester.
This letter is written by Roger Stevens. It's headed Unsafe Roads. Sir, the Chronicle of April the 15th reports that the successful application for an additional house in the garden of Plover Hill on Compton Down. Hitherto, there's been a moratorium on additional development on Compton Down on the grounds that two road junctions that provide the sole access to the area are substandard and not fit for additional traffic. This particularly applies to egress. One junction has a blind spot due to a dip in the road, while the other has a very short visibility display. However, due to a change of policy at Hampshire County Council, HCC, the junctions are judged fit for incremental increases in traffic. In effect, HCC has declared a development free-for-all on Compton Down, in that the traffic increase due to any individual back garden development will be incremental and hence of no consequence. HCC's new policy is part of the current topsy-turvy approach to green issues, traffic and road safety. On the one hand, these two junctions that were previously declared to be at safe capacity are now declared okay for unlimited increases in traffic. On the other hand, more 20-mile-an-hour zones are being imposed on Winchester's roads. Green issues are tossed aside to spend millions improving the M-Way junction at Winnell and converting our local part of the M3 to a smart death way in order to encourage more road use, relocate the summer traffic jams to the M3-M27 junction and take more freight off the railways and onto lorries grinding side by side up the A34. Competent authorities acting in the public interest would do better than this, as written by Roger Stevens, Cliffway, Compton, Winchester.
Richard Chisnell writes to Letters to the Editor with the subject Need for Airport. Sir, I am somewhat surprised that no mention has so far been made regarding the comparative proximity of Bournemouth Airport to Eastleigh. I believe Portsmouth already has a longer runway and Palmair used to fly a 747 from there. I think EasyJet and Ryanair have currently or hope to plan a holiday flight from Bournemouth in the summer months, subject of course to the recommencement of international travel. Bournemouth is to Southampton as Gatwick is to Heathrow, with its emphasis on holiday traffic. Journey time between Bournemouth and Southampton, circa 30 minutes, is probably about the same between Heathrow and central London. As a regular business user of Southampton Airport in days gone by, I venture to suggest that Southampton will regain much of its UK business travel clientele once life returns to a new normal, and as a St Cross resident, I venture for a significant number of daily flights landing or flying close by when Flybe are operating. The economic recovery will surely continue to determine the market for a return to the busy flight days, assuming one or more airlines share the economic aspirations. It has certainly been a more peaceful 12 or more months without Flybe. But I fully expect that and hear the business travel will soon get Southampton Airport flying once again. We want Hampshire to have a strong economy. Let Bournemouth take the holiday piece package or charter traffic so that they can fully utilise their airway, existing and longer runway. Do we need two contributing and competing holiday airports in such close proximity? And there asks Richard Chisnell of Edward Road, St Cross, Winchester.
Elizabeth Barron writes about the Reverend Mike Gardner. Sir, I was pleased to read a tribute in the Hampshire Chronicle, April the 8th, to the Reverend Mike Gardner and his wife, Kate. I would like to add that Mike was a good friend of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital Nurses League and for several years presided over our Florence Nightingale commemoration services held each May and our 80th anniversary service in 2019. He always made members of the league feel valued for the many years' service they have given to health care. Mike always enjoyed the lunch following services, chatting to members and showing an interest in their past and recent careers and what they were doing in retirement. COVID struck, so unfortunately our 2020 meeting was cancelled and saying thank you to Mike in person on his retirement wasn't possible. Appreciation was shown by the league by sending a card and donating towards the gift from St Luke's Parish. Well done, St Luke's, and thank you, Mike, for your support of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital Nurses League. That is from Elizabeth Barron, who's Vice President of the Nurses League of St Swithin Street, Winchester. Well, that was our letters to the editor from the Hampshire Chronicle. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836, or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could use a good old-fashioned letter to write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. You could always drop in when you're in Winchester. Why not? Oh, except I think the office is closed at the moment. Anyway, so that's the end of the letters. So we now move on, please, to editorial comment, which will be read by...
Yes, thank you. The editor heads his piece, Remove Anonymity from the Internet. He goes on. This newspaper has said it before and is saying it again. It is time to remove anonymity from the Internet. Anyone interested in healthy democracy and civic society should be extremely concerned at the level of abuse towards female politicians and women in general. We welcome Meon Valley MP Flick Drummond's highlighting of the issue when announcing she is leaving the social media platform on Twitter. When we have raised the issue before, we have been criticised for advocating something that would stop whistleblowing and take away voices from the marginalised and the dispossessed. In fact, all it would do is to take away the cover for this, in this case, misogynistic weirdos. Anyone who knows anything about whistleblowing knows that whistleblowers do not act anonymously. That's a hard word to say. In the 25 plus years since the internet arrived, a culture of coarseness has been allowed to grow in poisoned soil. The fertilizer for this was anonymity, that people could say what they liked and get away with it. But the foul racism and hatred of women can no longer be allowed to thrive in the darkness. It is time to shed some light.
Thank you, Rods. Now we move on to the Joanna Lewis column, which is headed this week, A Time to Build. Those who sail the sea tell stories of its danger. It's a line about the terrifying power of nature from one of the readings Prince Philip chose from the Old Testament for national reflection during that most moving, extraordinary and triumphant final farewell. A mighty send-off like no other. What a life lived to the max, and one lived in total loyalty to the Queen and the monarchy, unlike one of his grandsons. The prince also remained steadfastly devoted to the cause of saving the planet, serving as president of the World Wildlife Fund for many years. His warning above, taken from the book of Ecclesiastes, is that right? Ecclesiastes, yes it is, has a very contemporary incarnation in Netflix, no less. For a documentary aired in March, Seaspiracy has been making waves. It claims the ocean is heading towards imminent catastrophe through overfishing, seabed trawling, the slaughter of marine animals, and the lie that it is sustainable farmed fishing. Even if their date of 2050 for the beginning of the end is highly disputed, the rift in that direction is not. Sea change in fundamental policies only ever comes after a war or an unexpected shock. In just over a decade, we've weathered a global financial crash, a global pandemic, and the deadly impacts of global warming. That's three. But as yet, we're not living through any sign of meaningful response from government. Instead, we have old solutions because of vested interests. Those vested interests, not the global problems we are facing, will be our undoing. Take the government's 1950s build, build, build mantra. This is threatening to turn Hampshire into Great Woking. Almost every week, a new feisty local protest group is forced into being as chunk after chunk of rural land is eyed up by investors. Councillors and MPs just stand by and bleat the words, housing crisis. What tosh. Current new housing is not selling as predicted. Why would it? The economy is destined to contract. Migration has been tempered and the population growth is predicted to steadily fall. There will be fewer and fewer homeowners for these brick boxes as the gap widens between those with appreciating assets and those relying on shrinking income. It will mean even more young people paying rent well above a mortgage to portfolio property owners. It's criminal. There is no need for any new towns to be built on fields and forests. More effective would be the taxation of multiple property ownership so that the wealthy hand back some of what they don't need. Add to this the tackling of the current large numbers of empty properties. and all vacant brownfield sites being banked to inflate land prices could be subject to legislation. It's monstrous that green belt builds are being peddled as the solution to a problem that is nothing compared to the real problem. Just before the pandemic, the threats to the Solent, the River Test, air quality and biodiversity were starting to impact on planning rules. Now what rules? And what about all the sewage that's recently surfaced? As the growing stench around David Cameron reveals, the reason for this tragic raid on our countryside and wildlife is the power of lobbying on behalf of the old boy investor property developer network. The case of Greensill might be at national level, but that kind of bullying and leverage over government runs right from the top down to the local bottom feeders, trying to run rings around planning officials and the public. Who has been one of the first to defend Cameron? Well, no less than his old chum, George Useless Eustace, Secretary of State for Environment. God help our environment in the age of chumocracy. As Ecclesiastes also says, there's a time to live and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to reap, a time to destroy and a time to heal. Well, now it's time for that lot to push off. Now we have an item about an MP and Twitter.
Yes, we have. And it is entitled MP Off Twitter. Flick Drummond told Parliament she had suspended her Twitter account because of sustained abuse. The Mearne Valley MP also warned that women will not enter public life unless more is done to stop the hate. She said she was open to criticism and understood many others will disagree with her views, but that the number of abusive comments was out of control. Social media is getting out of hand and it is intimidating, she explained. It was fine when Facebook and Twitter started, but no longer. Like others, I have come off Twitter. There is no point in looking at comments designed to hurt one personally rather than deal with politics. Speaking during the elected women representatives online abuse debate, Ms. Drummond acknowledged that Twitter had brought in measures to help, but added she would not be returning to the platform as a public figure for the foreseeable future. And she now hides abusive comments on Facebook too. My concern is that what is happening puts people, and especially women, off entering public life. The Fawcett Society sent some figures this week stating that a number of women unlikely to start as an MP has risen to 74% from 59% in 2019. And in relation to standing as a councillor, it has risen to 62% from 44%, with 69% citing abuse or harassment from public or other parties as a reason for not pursuing a career in politics. That is appalling. And if it stays on that trajectory, we will not have any women who want to stand and we'll go back to the days of men dominating the corridors of power, just as we were beginning to make inroads with female representation in Parliament, even when it is only at 34%.
Thank you, Ros. Now, I now have the letter from Westminster, which is written this week by the MP for Winchester and District, Steve Brine. We have in recent weeks announced details of almost 3,000 organisations being offered grants and loans to help the culture, oblique heritage sector reopen and recover from COVID. As a member of the Digital Culture, Media and Sport Select Committee, I have taken a close interest in the Culture Recovery Fund, worth 1.5 £1.57 billion. But as our constituency MP, I've watched it like a hawk. Last year, our area did well from the fund, and I know many of our most valued institutions received lifeline support. This month, in Tranche 2, £1.8 million in further grants were awarded to organisations including Winchester Cathedral, the Theatre Royal, Integrate Dance Unit 12 in Winnell, and the much-loved Railway Inn in Winchester. Working with the Live Music Trust, I've taken a special interest in this one because these grassroots venues are the very heart of our world-beating musical industry. I realise for some it may be questionable to spend vast sums of public money on fun, but we take the view that we must have a strong society to return to post-pandemic. And of course, tens of thousands of freelancers rely on the creative industry, so it matters, and I am proud of my government has stood with the sector. This is state interventionism, and to my mind, it's well placed from national government. The Culture Recovery Fund, like the phenomenal Vaccine Task Force, is a lesson in statecraft, for which the PM deserves credit. Well-directed interventionism here from local government would be welcome too, but we need a step change to make it count. Last year, much to the irritation of some, for whom it perhaps rang a little too true, I said in this column that the future of work is one example that presents great opportunity for Winchester. But I questioned whether we have the vision, local leadership and ambition to grab it and steal a march on our competitors. My question remains, more so than before. My central thesis then, as now, is that Winchester can no longer afford to indulge in perpetual debate and self-interested legal challenge because of the changing workplace is now. Winchester still lacks a bold, coherent strategy to be an exciting workplace destination that understands there's a place for us between the part-time return to the office and the need to let the kitchen table be the kitchen table again. The city centre is changing, and newly available former retail space presents an opportunity for that intervention that gives new inspiration to the private sector to invest. One follows the other. Expensive consultants, second-guessed by albeit well-meaning officers and councillors, are not going to cut it. They're one great win for fans of treading water and doing anything for fear of upsetting anyone. Let's be honest and admit, wide-scale urban regeneration and economic strategy in a heritage city is a serious business, and it requires serious people who know what they're doing. Time to set a course and let the experts get on with it from here too. Now we have a piece from Belgarum who gives an alternative view of the news, and it's headed Lockdown Opportunity to Make Instruments. What does a man who is usually fixing guitars do in a national lockdown? Well, Belgarum can tell you. He makes his own instruments. At least that is what Brian Haywood of Haywood Guitars on Stockbridge Road, Winchester, has been doing. The expert has been putting together folk instruments at home, upcycling scrap woods. He said, "The bass player in my band was making a kit cigar box guitar, so I said I'd make an upcycled banjo. We already do a lot of charity work for Hampshire Air Ambulance. The first gig in St James Tavern is on July the 4th, so I thought it would be fun to have a project to do lockdown guitars band and make a bit of cash for the air ambulance. I'd recommend trying to make any sort of instrument, no matter how basic. It's a great thing to make somehow, something you can get a tune out of. I've also been getting my wife to paint them and encouraging musician friends to do similar, with a view of eventually doing a charity gig with lockdown instruments. Mr. Hayward's shop is now open once again, and you can contact him at info@haywoodguitars.com. Right, we now have a few items of sort of vaguely historical interest. Rod has got the first one, please.
Yes, thank you. This is absolutely historical. It's a last postcard from a Titanic crewman. A postcard written by the Titanic's senior radio operator just weeks before the ocean liner sank in the North Atlantic in 1912 has been put up for auction. The card, with a glossy image of the ill-fated ship on the front, was written by Jack Phillips to his sister Esther Phillips on March 1912, while awaiting the ship's first sea trials, according to RR Auction in Boston. Very busy, working late. Hope to leave on Monday and arrive Sotten Wednesday afternoon. Hope you're quite okay. Heard from Ethel yesterday, he wrote. The postcard is signed Love, Jack. It is postmarked Belfast, where the Titanic was built, and has a cancelled halfpenny stamp. Sotten is the contraction of Southampton, from where the Titanic departed on its maiden voyage. It sank in the early morning of April the 15th. Phillips, who turned 25 on board, stayed at his post after the Titanic struck an iceberg to send calls for assistance for their ship in the area all until water was lapping around his feet, according to RR Auction. He made it off the ship after being told by the captain that he had done his duty, according to his biography in the British National Archives, but died of exposure to the frigid North Atlantic, according to RR Auction. The postcard being sold is by the estate of Vera and John Gillespie, the longest-standing members of the Massachusetts-based Titanic Historical Society, said Bobby Livingston, executive president at RR Auction. It is expected to sell for around $15,000. £11,000 in the fine autographs and artifacts auction that began on March the 26th and ends on Wednesday, the day before the anniversary of the tragedy. Phillips sent his letters, a sister, sorry, I'm sorry, I'll start that again. Phillips sent his sisters hundreds of postcards during his career, often depicting the ships on which he was serving at the time. But only a handful were connected to the Titanic, Mr. Livingston said.
This item is headed Entering the Last Decade of Steam. A treasure trove of photos from a bygone era have been sent to the Hampshire Chronicle by the daughter of a former correspondent to this newspaper. They capture the autumn of days for steam travel in Hampshire in the 1950s. Within 10 years, steam had been replaced by diesel and electric. The photographs were sent to us by Di Jeans and were taken by her father, Dr. J. L. Farmer, who was a railway enthusiast. He wrote articles, railway notes for the Hampshire Chronicle under the initials TJ during the 1950s before he died aged 46 in February 1960 when Di was 10 years old and her sister aged 15. Di told the Chronicle, "I do remember spending much time alongside railway lines and viewing locomotives. As medical officer of health for the Winchester Rural District and responsible for organising mental health facilities in Hampshire, he managed to combine his travels around the county, visiting patients and training centres, with viewing railways pre-beaching. As a pastime, he would spend many Friday evenings in the signal box at Shawford Junction with his friend, the signalman Clive Timpson, Tinny, and my sister and I would sometimes be there, taken there as a special treat and allowed to move the levers." Di, who now lives in Broadchalk near Salisbury, is often pictured in her St. Swithin's School uniform, and the family access to the track suggests health and safety was less of a consideration in the 1950s. Her mum died in 2003. Sadly, I don't know where they were taken, apart from the ones with the station and the signal box names on them, said Di. So if anyone knows, please contact news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. The pictures capture the era of gradual decline in the railways as more people bought cars. Many of the photos were taken on the Meon Valley line, which ran from Alton to Wickham and closed to passengers in 1955. The photos of Winchester Station show the goods yard that is now parking for computers. No, for commuters. Yes, that was almost right. So before we go on to the general news, we have the excitement of the dawn and sunset times. So the sunrise this week will be around 5:45 in the morning, and sunset will be around 8:00. So we then go on to the general news. The first item from Ros, please.
Yes, thank you. This is headed Otterley Fun Trail Says Thanks. Winchester will be thanking its key workers with a free trail later this year. The city's Business Improvement District, in future referred to as BID, B-I-D, has announced it will host a COVID-safe otter trail. Every participating shop and business will display a key worker otter in its window and a brightly coloured sticker showing a QR code. Participants can download a map from BID's website from Friday, May the 21st, 2021, to use to help them explore the city centre. Sarah Davis, Business Improvement District Manager at the BID, said, "We are so pleased and proud to be able to deliver the trail that celebrates the extraordinary lengths that key workers have gone to over the past year, as well as raising funds for such an important new local charity. There will be 30 otters in total located around the city, each with their own identity from a variety of different key worker roles, including doctors, nurses, teachers, police, military and many more. The event will run from Saturday, May the 22nd to Wednesday, June the 30th, 2021. Participants and businesses, the wider local community, will be able to bid to buy an individual of otter via an online auction accessed through the Winchester Hospice website. The funds raised will be equally split between the hospice appeal and the events company. That's a very exciting project.
Thank you, Ros. The next item is headed Moorside Care Home Could Close. The future of a specialist dementia care home in Winchester is uncertain as a charity reviews its operations amid the coronavirus pandemic. St John's Winchester says it is undertaking an operation review with a decision set to be made on Moorside on April the 27th. Moorside is on Dern Gate and opened as a specialist dementia care home some 25 years ago. In a statement released to the Chronicle, the charity, which operates a number of almshouses with 150 residents in the city centre, said closure was being considered. The statement said, in response to rumours in circulation that it's St John's Moorside Care Home may close, St John's Winchester announces that the charity is carrying out a review of its strategy and operations in light of the financial and other impacts of the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, including its care home providing nursing care to those living with dementia. The board of the charity will meet towards the end of April to discuss some of these plans, and at this point the future of Moorside continues to be considered. Relatives and representatives of Moorside's residents and the home staff have been in contact to address the rumours. St John's chairman of trustees, Roger Bright, said, "I do understand that this is unsettling for staff, and I'm sorry for what our ongoing discussions, which have not yet been concluded, should have come to light in this way." Mr. Bright added, "The charity's finances are fundamentally sound, but a review is required in order to ensure that our financial position is not undermined by the long-term impacts of the pandemic. During this time, the services and high standards of care and support our residents and beneficiaries receive from the charity will continue as normal." Clive Cook, charity chief executive, added, "The board will consider various plans in late April, and we will make a further announcement regarding our Moorside care home at this time once discussions have taken place." Mr. Cook stressed that no outcome had been decided and the decision would be taken at the end of the month. In 2016, the charity closed Devonish House on Southgate Street because its location in a Georgian townhouse was not fit for modern care. It was sold to a developer to be converted into flats. At that time, care at Moorside was extended. Moorside can currently care for up to 31 people. Its most recent inspection report by the Care Quality Commission rated it as good. The weekly cost of living at Moorside for self-funding residents ranges from £995 to £1,255. St John's is one of the oldest charities in the country, dating its roots back 900 years.
This item I've got is about a golf pro who stole £10,000, and the court hears the case. A golf professional has appeared in court accused of defrauding the club out of more than £10,000 in green fees and a pro-am charity event. Stephen Hunter was head pro at Royal Winchester Golf Club when the alleged crimes took place. He appeared in Magistrates Court last Thursday via video link, charged with fraud by abuse of position, theft by employee, and fraud by false representation. Hunter, 53, was responsible for running the golf shop and collecting the £60 a time green fees which were paid by visiting golfers for a round. He faces two charges relating to defrauding the club of green fees between 2006 and 2018. In addition, he is also charged with stealing money from a two-day charity pro-am event held in memory of a long-standing member of the golf club, which was founded in 1888. Prosecutor Kerry Richardson said, "Mr. Hunter held a position of trust within the golf club. The offences were carried out over a sustained period of time." Hunter, of Mill Lane, Abbotsworthy, entered a plea of no indication in all three charges, which means that he will enter a formal plea at the next court hearing. District Judge Timothy Pattinson sent the case to the Winchester Crown Court to be heard next month.
Slight rise in COVID-19 cases. COVID-19 has returned in low numbers to three areas of Winchester City, according to the latest figures. Winchester West, the area that includes Fulflood and Wheak, Winchester North and Sparsholt and Winchester Central and South all report either three of four cases in the 7 days to April the 15th, the most recent day for which figures are available. 11 other areas have reported fewer than three cases in those 7 days and are now marked white on the government map. The last week, the only areas with more than two cases were Winchester West, Whiteley, Knowle, Wickham, Denmead and Southwick. Across the Winchester district in those 7 days, there have been 19 cases, up to or 12% on the previous week, for a rolling number of 100,000 people of 15.2. A week ago, the equivalent number was 16, down 2 on the previous 7 days. The Press Association National News Agency reported that figures to April the 16th show 109 local authority areas out of 315 in the UK with a better record than Winchester, an increase from 27 on April the 3rd. No deaths have been reported by the NHS in Hampshire this week, and only one in Portsmouth, two in Southampton. The death toll in Winchester District of 183 has been the same now for 49 days. The number of COVID deaths in the three hospitals of the Hampshire Hospitals Foundation Trust remains at 438, with no deaths for 33 days. There were only 9 COVID patients in Basingstoke Hospital, 3 at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, and none in Andover. No Winchester schools were affected by COVID, and only one across the whole of Hampshire, St Thomas More Primary in Havant. However, there are currently 3 cases linked to the university, according to its website yesterday, the highest number for several weeks.
Yes, I've got an item now which is headed the first full pedestrianisation of the square. That's the square in Winchester. This weekend saw the first full pedestrianisation of the square in Winchester city centre. Between Boots and Great Minster Street, the road would close to all vehicles apart from bicycles. Local businesses took the opportunity to put tables and chairs out into the road, and residents and visitors flocked to use them. City Councillor Martin Todd, who worked with City and County Council officers as well as local residents and businesses to develop the plan, said, "We had 2 glorious days at the weekend, and it was good to see so many people returning to the centre. It was particularly good to see people enjoying the square on Sunday and Saturday. It's taken a huge amount of work to make it happen, but looking at the results, it's been definitely worth it. This is the latest change in the 12-month temporary scheme in place at Great Minster Street in the square. Green campaigners have been arguing for the move for more than 20 years. Last month, the Chronicle reported on the closure, which had been a popular route through the city. The online story attracted a mixed response. One person said, "It really does seem that parking in the centre is now the preserve of the great and the good, while the plebs take to sit at tables and eat cake after walking in." But another commented, "Brilliant news it's been closed. As mentioned, there are plenty of their other means to access the city centre. Bus, train, park and ride, cycle and walk."
Decision day over new car park plans. Civic chiefs are set to decide controversial plans for a multi-storey car park in Winchester. The proposal by the City Council on the former Voltex Bank store site in Bar End go before the Planning Committee today, that is April the 22nd. Residents of nearby Dunham Road are urging councillors to refuse the scheme, saying it will tower over their homes. They say that the initial plans to extend the park and ride approved last May have significantly changed. In early March 2020, an application was made for the change of use as an extension of the current park and ride system. This was for 123 cars, and the application was approved in May 2020. No public objections were submitted. Around the same time, the City Council applied to the M3 Local Enterprise Partnership for a grant of £5.65 million to build a multi-storey car park. The report by M3 said commuters and visitors into Winchester will find it easier to go low carbon with this new park and ride and EV charge scheme. The £5.6 million facility will create 240 jobs, combine at least 300 park and ride spaces with electric vehicle charging points powered by renewable solar energy. But the city council was faced with a backlash after submitting another application for the 15-metre construction with three levels. There has been a last-minute stream of objections, with 76 registered with the council planning department and only one expression of support. Michael Hurd, who lives nearby, said, "I have requested details of this submission from the council, but as yet I have not been sent it. I find it difficult to understand how it creates 240 jobs. COVID then changed things as far as car parking requirements and the many calculations made about the future provision of car parking. Before August 2020, the grant was approved with the spend needed prior to January 2022. Detailed design and two local Zoom meetings were set up. There were minor changes to design, but the height and stories the same. In January 2021, the new planning application was made for a multi-storey car park for 287 cars, photoelectric panels and EV charging points.
The next item is footfall increases as city centre begins to open. Since shops reopened last Monday, the city has been bustling. Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, has shown just how much of a difference the relaxed rules have made. Footfall counters across the city picked up 25,499 people between April the 12th to the 18th. This was a 65% higher than the previous week, which when 15,412 people were recorded, and 24% higher than this time last year during the first national lockdown. The busiest day was Saturday, April the 17th, 4,019. The busiest hour was 3 p.m. to 3:55 p.m. on the same day, 450. A counter balanced at the Bridge Patisserie counted 10,642 between April the 12th, up 62% week on week and 90% year on year. The counter in Lower High Street counted 7,668, up 110% week on weekend and 441% year on year. Most restaurants in Jury Street remained closed. This is reflected by the data as the counter at Theatre Royal Winchester counted 3,098 people between April the 12th to the 18th, a mere 8% increase on the previous week. Paul Spencer, executive director of the BID, said, "Of course, you need to be aware that the sensors only pick up people walking past them and therefore do not indicate total footfall in the whole of the city centre. So the important thing is the trends and the percentage increases, decreases, rather than the numbers themselves."
Winchester prepares for election battles. Major developments in the heart of Winchester and the bins will be among the main issues in the forthcoming City Council elections on Thursday, May the 6th. Coronavirus has halted much progress on the Central Winchester Regeneration, better known as Silver Hill, and the £150 million redevelopment of Station Approach. Progress on both has been glacial for several years, with the Tories blaming the Lib Dems. The Tories are working hard to exploit unhappiness over the new charges for green recycling bins. The Lib Dems point out that they are almost the last authority in Hampshire to introduce the charge, and most of the other councils have done so have been Conservative. These seats should have been contested last May, but were postponed because of the first lockdown. It means that the City Council contests a third of its seats, which will coincide with County Council elections, as well as one for the Police and Crime Commissioner. There are currently 45 seats on the City Council, which has been Liberal Democrat controlled since May 2019. They hold 26 seats, the Conservatives have 15, and three independents, all former Tory councillors. One seat is vacant following the resignation of Kim Gottlieb last year. The Lib Dems hold 8 of the seats being contested, as opposed to 6 Tory and 1 independent, Lisa Griffiths. The Conservatives, to take control of the council, they would need to win at least 5 Lib Dem seats. Council leader Lucille Thompson told the Chronicle, "We've had a great response on the doorstep, with residents telling us they don't want to see a return to Conservative rule at the City Council. They particularly like what we've been doing on increasing our recycling rates and cutting the council's carbon footprint, and are impressed with our council house building programme. They want us to ensure that our businesses and communities recover strongly from the pandemic, which we will of course continue to focus on as we move forward. And the initiatives such as pedestrianising the square and bringing markets to the Broadway that are helping the city recover." There's a lot of comment about the County Council. Residents have seen them hike council tax to record levels, and yet our roads and pavements are falling apart. Conservative group leader Caroline Horrell said, "The Liberal Democrats have done little more in 2 years than put up taxes and charges to hit residents hard in the pocket during these challenging times. They have taken none of the major projects forward. They've tried to stop the Sport and Leisure Centre at Bar End, but now it's nearly completed, they claim it as their own. The last 2 years have been a talking shop with long, drawn-out consultation on issues that thousands of residents have already told us about, such as Central Winchester. What residents tell us is that they want is action, not to kick the tough decisions down the road." The Tories also say they will reverse evening and Sunday parking charges. For Labour, former councillor Patrick Davies said, "As we recover from the COVID pandemic, the regeneration of our city centre is vital. We need a wide range of views about the future of empty sites with full and open public involvement. A group of Labour councillors would be of enormous benefit to our city. Proper democracy does not flourish when so few different opinions can be expressed in the council chamber." Mr. Davies said Labour would insist on a first-class new bus station in the city centre, essential for residents and visitors alike. The Greens are also contesting most of the seats. Candidate Max Prizeman said, "With a vote for the Greens, locals can demonstrate their desire to transition to a green well-being economy that is based on local businesses and neighbourhoods. Many vulnerable people had to rely on local communities during the pandemic. We want to strengthen local initiatives and local businesses. A proposal is to build ultra-low energy passive houses on inner city car parks such as St Peter's off Gordon Road in Hyde. We should limit new housing developments to the need for council and truly affordable homes on brownfield sites only. We should not be building housing developments for capital investment on green land, as this will only create a new housing bubble and destroy our valuable countryside forever."
Next item from me is celebrating St George. Coldham Common residents are rearing up for their St George English Festival, April the 23rd to the 25th. Children have been colouring in pictures of the patron saint and his dragon as part of a competition. Adults have been putting pencil and brushes to paper in an effort to draw or paint a design based on the English red and white flag. When the competition, organised by Coldham Common Community Association, closes, most of the art will be used to decorate the community centre, along with flags and buntings. It sounds lovely. Brian O'Neill said flags and bunting will have a great deal of colour to the Brit village in preparation for some street parties on Sunday, April the 25th, in the afternoon, climaxing with residents having village-wide English afternoon teas on their front lawns or drive at 4pm. Another feature of the weekend is mainly aimed for the young people to celebrate St George's Day by building a tent or den in their homes to sleep in, or camping in their tents and caravans overnight in their back gardens. Some adults and whole families are known to be using the competition to get their first night camping this year, trying out their equipment in the garden. How lovely.
Biggest food and drink festival in the UK set for the city. The biggest gourmet food, drink and music series in the UK is coming to Winchester. Foodies Festival will feature MasterChef and Bake Off champions and chart-topping musicians, including Scouting for Girls. That's a group, by the way. For the third year running, the event will also be in aid of Musicians Against Homelessness, with tickets raising money for the UK-wide homelessness charity Crisis. Festival director Sue Hitchin said, "I'm so pleased to bring Foodies Festival to the beautiful city of Winchester, which has been such a popular food market and a great local foodie scene. We will be celebrating Hampshire's local produce and giving top chefs from local residents an opportunity to cook live in the Chef's Theatre. As we're outdoors and in local parks, we'll be able to plan COVID-safe festivals, and our experienced health and safety team are working closely with local councils across the country to make sure we take all appropriate measures and follow government guidelines to keep everyone safe. There has never been a better time to support local restaurants and food producers, and we are all ready to enjoy a fun day out with friends. The festival run at River Park Recreation Ground from Friday, July the 16th to Sunday, July the 18th. Scouting for Girls star Roy Stride said, "After a long, dismal year away from touring and seeing our fans, we are all hugely excited to be playing Foodies Festival. It's not just that we'll be playing our favourite songs again in a real-life crowd as the sun sets on a perfect summer's day out. It's also the sense of liberation and relief that will come with the fest for everyone involved. The fact that we're all able to sample an amazing smorgasbord of food and drink from around the world is another great bonus. Also on the lineup is top-ranked tribute acts Maybe Gaga and Ultimate Coldplay, alongside 50 other artists. Celebrity chefs include Tom Rhodes, MasterChef 2021 champion, Alex Webb, MasterChef, the professionals champion, 2020 MasterChef winner Thomas Frack, and Dave Friday, Hampshire's Great British Bake Off star."
Plans for Beauty Spot to take time. The landowners and governing bodies of Farley Mount are discussing plans for the future. Last month, the Chronicle reported that car parks could be closed and the Beauty Spot near Winchester to ward off professional dog walkers. It is unclear whether these closures were decided or would be consulted on before being actioned. Now it has emerged that the South Lynch Estate, which owns part of Farley Mount, the Forestry Commission and Hampshire County Council, are meeting regularly to figure out a plan that all parties are in agreement with. George Rees of the South Lynch Estate Office said, "We will be consulting with local parish councils and local residents for a comprehensive plan that is going to keep everyone happy, with long-term benefits for the site, and is going to take a fair bit more time to get sorted." A letter written by Chairman of Hursley Parish Council, Councillor David Killen, stated that some car parks will be closed on trial because professional dog walkers are deterring residents from using the land. One commentator on the Chronicle's website said, "Early last month, so still in full lockdown, I cycled by and counted over 10 cars abandoned in the road as all car parks were already full. Closing car parks will only push up more users onto the roads, taking up the passing places and creating traffic mayhem." Creating traffic mayhem, I think it means. Another added, "I visit Farley Mount every day, but not weekends, with my dog. I have noticed an increase in people using it since lockdown for sure. Only a couple of car parks are usually full, Crabwood and T Junction. The rest are usually fairly quiet. It might look like the forest is heaving, but once you're away from the car park, it is so vast, it is very peaceful. So the argument that it is swarming with professional dog walkers is a fallacy. There are some problems with dog poo being picked up, and that just annoys me. Another issue is the number of people walking, running, cycling on the road from Winchester and no park from Sarum Road. Would love to see a path created for the public to make it make it safer, particularly for children." I'm sorry, I read that bit badly. "To make it safe, particularly for children." Thank you.
Thank you, Roz. Last item that we have is headed, "Theatre's Diary Fills Up as Circus is Booked." Winchester Theatre Royal is filling up its diary for the first time in months. The Circus of Horrors is hitting the stage on June the 6th as lockdown restrictions ease. Now, when the show started at Glastonbury in 1995, people thought it would not run for 25 weeks, let alone 25 years. A quarter of a century later, and the Circus of Horrors is still touring all over the world. Creator and ringmaster Dr. Hayes said, "The Circus of Horrors are itching to get back to what they know best, producing the best rip-roaring, sensational entertainment. It's been far too long, but the flicker at the end of the tunnel is turning into an inferno, and we are ready. The new show will be a celebration of its amazing history and will include an amalgamation of acts driven by rock and roll soundscape. Oh, and the show will be performed socially distanced." Well, that's all we have for you this week. Hope you've enjoyed this reading from the Hampshire Chronicle. Before we go, another reminder that Liz Legrees is the person to call if you have any problems with recording, and her contact number is on the key fob attached to your memory stick. Thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, to our editors, Gordon and Liz Legg, and of course, thank you to my other reader, Roz.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye. And from me, goodbye until the next time. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet along with the address label when you finish with it, and return it to us as soon as possible. Thank you.